The Bitochen of Nechoma. Not quite sure what that title means, but I think that it's certainly appropriate. Bitochen is always appropriate. And after Tisha B'Av, we start the Shiva Nechemta, 7 weeks till Rosh Hashanah, believe it or not. 7 weeks, 7 Haftarahs, all about Nechoma. And we're a people that needs as much Nechoma as we can get, because not only do we have sorrows and tragedies, but our existence is one massive tragic existence because of the fact that we're in Golus, and the Churban, which took place 1950 years ago, something like that, we're still feeling the effects. The Golus is full of trouble. Wherever you turn, it hasn't changed. Sometimes things quiet down for a while, they pop up someplace else or in a different form, but you know, we're not accepted in the world. We're needed in the world. Everybody realizes that. But we're certainly not accepted, not to mention not beloved. This is where we are. Eretz Yisrael today, unfortunately, is not much better. The matzav there there's a government that is bent on eradicating the strongly religious community, the Haredi community, because it's I think I saw it written someplace that in 20 years or by 20 years or less, something, almost a majority of the first graders will be Haredi. You know, like it's, you know, the birth rate and the becoming establishment, and there's a lot of issues, and the issues with the draft, and looking to undermine the yeshivas, looking to undermine the Shmira Shabbos, looking to undermine, you know, they want to make it a Jewish state. Yes, that's true, but the definition of a Jewish state means a Jewish state, but not. Religion should, you know, has to be complete freedom of religion. The status quo, the religious establishment, should not be the way it is. So we have Golus and Golus-related issues all over the world. And for that, we need constant ongoing Nechoma. We can't wait to the end for the Nechoma. That Nechoma will come. You know, we asked this yesterday, or almost Tisha B'Av.
Yesterday.
Not sure which world I'm
in. I don't know, Israel, what it was.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, I'm a little bit confused with the traveling. But we asked for the Nechomas Tzion, and we're talking about, you know, Menachem Tzion Ubenei Yerushalayim. But before that, we need a lot of Nechomas too, just in the process. So I thought maybe we would talk a little bit about, you know, the relationship between Bitochen and Nechoma, and how the Bitochen Bashem can provide us with Nechoma. A very, just to cite a few things, a very classic source is the Kapitel Chof Gimel in Tehillim, Mizmor Dovid Hashem Roi Lo Yechzor. So Hashem is compared to a shepherd. And David HaMelech goes on there and says, Shivtecho Mishantecho Heimo Yenachamuni. Your shevet, which is your whip, and your mishenes, which is your cane, that you lean on, staff, whatever is, thy rod and thy staff, you know, that's the way they translate it. So that's the, will comfort me, Nechoma. So I understand a cane is a source of Nechoma. You lean on the cane, you have some kind of, you know, help from the cane. But a shevet is a whip. whips don't give nechama. Whips cause the need for nechama. You know, so what's going on here? So I heard once, actually heard it from my father-in-law, Zechuna Levrocha, and he said that Moshel, I think it's his Moshel, he saw it someplace, but Moshel to a shepherd, and he's grazing his flock, and it's a beautiful sunny afternoon, everything is fine. And then the day wanes, and it's getting dark already, time, or, you know, approaching sunset, and time to gather the flock in. He gathers in his flock, and he takes a head count, and he's missing one little shepsela. And he sets out to look for it, you know, searching the fields. And the little lamb is also getting a little nervous, because it's starting to get dark, and, you know, looking for the shepherd, looking to, she's lost. All of a sudden, he spots her in the distance, and he whips her in the back with his whip. And this, the shevet is the source of the chumah. The shepherd hasn't forgotten me. The shepherd has found me. The shepherd is here to be involved with me. And it seems that there's such a concept that in the depths of suffering, a person can find the fact that the very fact that the shepherd is hitting me can be the very source of the nechama that gives me the strength to cope with this. Because I say that, what is he hitting me? What is he giving me this tzara? He is a god of vengeance. Some people, I don't like to say, but I say it often that unfortunately today, the only thing some people know about Hashem is Kel Nekoves Hashem. That's the only pasuk that they're aware of, you know. But all the chesed and all the rachamim and all the hatova and all the chanina and all the patience and all the emes and all the schar and all the love and all the, you know, they forget about. But he gains something from it. He has this need to punish me. What is he doing? Created the world to do chesed. And more than that, we have to realize, and this a little bit comes through some of the kinnis on Tisha B'Av, that on a certain level, we have to realize the tsar of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They bring Medroshim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is the day of the Churban, he cries, he says, what did I do? He says, I chased my children out of my house, and I destroyed my house, and now all I have is my suffering children. And he's feeling the pain, the tsar of the Golas, maybe, I'm sure, even more than we can feel it. So what is he doing? The Teretz says, he's there for me. I don't get it exactly how he's there for me. You know, I'm not sure this Shepsela was intelligent enough to get exactly how he's there for me. But I got it. But he's there. He's there. He's definitely there.
Felt it. Felt it.
Yeah. Yeah. With all due respect, who is causing the tsaras? He is. Nobody else is. Nobody else can. Nobody can do anything to us. It's all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein oid milvadoi. There is no other koyach in the world. So Memele, knowing that, even though it's in the midst, in the depth, in the feeling, in the pain of the situation, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here. He's with me. He's paying attention to me. He's thinking about me, and he cares for me, and he's in pain for me. And why exactly he has to do this? He feels it's so important for my well-being. I don't know, but I can know that. And Dovid HaMelech seems to be saying that shevet that you whip me with, that is and it can be a source of nechama. So I think that's important to keep in mind, that we can discover Hashem in the midst of the greatest difficulty, and at that moment we could say that I know you're here, I know you're caring for me, I know you haven't forgotten about me, I know you're taking care of me. I don't know exactly what your agenda is. I've often brought here the Tesis Rid that says that the reason Hashem had to put us in Mitzrayim is because we never could have been zoiche, b'schus, b'din, to the Kabbalah Satorah and all the mitzvahs, because we stem from Terach, or if they have the Zorah. So he put us in Mitzrayim and made us suffer. V'chas aleinu, and he had rachmonos on us. And now, berachamim, I can grant you far beyond, with this entitlement, I like to call it, far beyond what I could have granted you bedin. So, I don't know why you're doing this, I don't know what, maybe this is what's happening, but one thing I know, you're here, you're with me, you haven't forgotten about me, you're paying attention to me, but there's something else that I have to know also. Bechol tzorosam loy tzor, imay anoichi betzorah. In all of our tzoras, he has tzar. He's with us in the tzar. And that to realize that, and Matt, look at that. He's doing this to us. He's inflicting this tzar. And he is really punishing himself more than he's punishing us, because he feels our pain. And I would add, and I do admit that I never saw this anyplace, but I would imagine that kaviyocha, when we talk about Hashem in human terms, which is beyond true comprehension of what he is, imagine how I feel if I'm the one that caused the pain. Not only do I feel your pain, but I feel myself causing your pain. And that's really, I think, what the Loshon of the Medrash is. What did I do? Hichravti es beisi, I send out my children. In other words, I did it. Imagine, rachmanu litzlan, a parent. There was just an incident not long ago. I read someplace, I saw a parent that ran over a child. You know, a parent ran over his own child. What kind of tzar? And that's, so to us, when we see that, and he has such tzar, so we could feel that. I don't know, I don't get it, I don't like it, I'm not happy, I have tzar. But I have to have a certain level of nechova, knowing that that he's with me, and that this is not for naught, it is for a purpose. I think that's one point which is important to keep in mind, maybe a little bit difficult at times, you know. I'm sure we would rather not have that, you know, not have that he's with us. I'll never forget, I spoke once hotel many years ago, and we're talking about the fact that the events of the Holocaust were prophesied in the Torah. In Parshas Hazinu, if you read the Psukim there, it's so many events that so many statements that clearly parallel the events of the Holocaust. And even according to the Goyin has a cheshbon of each parsha being like 100 years, and this is the last 1,000th, and it's mamish, it's that parsha fits that time, and it's mind-boggling a little bit. Even the gas chambers are alluded to there, because
that the Ruach HaSimim is, actually, it was called?
What? No, I'm trying to think the word Ketif Meriri. That's right. It says Ketif Meriri in the Hazinu. So in the Ketif Yoshut Sorohim, in that posuk in Tilim, the Malbim says poisonous gas that kills.
Ruach Arsi. What? That's what you call it.
Ruach Arsi. That's what I forgot.
I heard this so many times.
But I'm getting old. Anyway, so because so I remember saying this. And there was a Holocaust survivor sitting in the audience right over there. And when I said, all of this, it was prophesied to us in the Torah that it's going to happen if you don't behave, if you don't do what you're supposed to do. This is what the Golus is going to be. So we know it's all from Hashem. Hashem told us up front, this is the consequence if you're not going to behave properly. And this guy very angrily said, Dem toiva binichem moichel. That toiva that he told us up front, I'm moichel him. In other words, like, don't do me no favors, you know, like, oh, he told me, oh, now it's great, you know. But the fact that he told us means it's all from Hashem. And we do have the ability to find a certain level of nechoma in that. Okay, but that's not enough for us, okay. There's another nechoma that I think that we can find. And all of it has to do with a really trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midas HaChesed and Midas HaRachamim. The pasuk says, "Berega koten azavtich וברחמים גדול למקבצך. פוסק you'll find it in the Haftorah from Parshas Noach, and I think also in Parshas Re'eh, if I'm not mistaken, one of the later Parshas here. ברגע קוד נעזבתך וברחמים גדול למקבצך. I have forsaken you for a moment and gathered you in, the kibbutz Golius, with great rachamim. So the Radak is bothered. Says, Rega Kotin. The Golus is not a Rega Kotin. It didn't happen. This Golus is not a split second. This Golus is an ongoing, long, and bitter, and miserable experience. What are you talking about, Rega Kotin? So the Radak says that when we'll see the Rachmei Deshmaya of the Kibbutz Golius, we'll see Hashem's mercy that He gathers Jews in from all over the world in Eretz Yisrael. He says, then the rachamim that we see from Hashem will allow us to feel in retrospect that the whole golus was a rega koton. It's just a mere moment. That's a tremendous nechoma. If a person's suffering pain, you know, pain is painful. But if he knows that the time will come when I will be so connected to Hashem's rachamim, so excited with Hashem's rachamim, so appreciative of Hashem's rachamim, so reliant in Hashem's rachamim, that I will feel as if all of this 2,000 years of misery and bloodshed and suffering was, wow, it was a rough minute or two over there. If we can come to that, that can be a tremendous source of nechama, because sometimes it's impossible to believe that there could be a nechama. And when we have the possibility to believe that, because okay, now I have tzoros. So what's going to happen is you're going to give me a good, after the tzoros, I suffered, I did my time, you know, I served my sentence, and now you're going to give me good. But I have a bad memory of the sentence, and I have the 10 years of the sentence, or however long it was, and how are you going to release that pain? It says, if you knew that retroactively, not only will it later become good, but it will retroactively turn everything else into good. You will look back and say, wow, I had every moment. There was a moment, Rega Koton, there was a small minute there of a little bit of suffering, but everything else retrospectively would be removed. It would be a great source of Nechama. If Bishas, the worst pain, we could realize that, we could eventually get rid of it, not just have something after it, but supplant it completely. But the question is, even that, like, how do you get to that? What do you? So I think there's another piece, and all of this requires emuna, but it's not just emuna; it's bitochen, but it's a different kind of a bitochen. It's a bitochen, a feeling of confidence, of trust, that everything Hashem does is all with a good cheshbon, that He created the world only to do chesed, and everything He does, olam chesed yibona, and kol mada overachmol letavovim. And if I can know that intellectually and feel that emotionally, that is a bal bitochen. Nochemish Gamzu was the ultimate bal bitochen in his generation. The Chachomim sent him to the Caesar in Rome, when the Romans made a decree about no learning and no mitzvahs and this, they sent Nochem Ish Gamzu to bring a gift to the Caesar and to plead on behalf. And of course we know the story. What happened was that in our Gemara, it doesn't say, the Gemara says he gave it to the case. He opened it up and he saw it was dirt, because the people in the inn where he stayed over switched the gold and jewels, whatever the Chachamim said, for dirt. But he wasn't fazed by it. And then the Yohanovi came and said, maybe this is the dirt that Avraham Avinu used that turned it to Arabs and you can beat your enemies and kachava and whatever. But there's an old girsa in the Gemara which was changed in all Gemaras. It says that he saw that it was dirt and he gave it anyway. That's a different level of bitochen. The Chachomim sent me with this, I'm giving it. Well, what do you mean you're giving it? You bring a bunch of dirt to the Kesar? What's that going to do for us? there's a tremendous level of anyway. So we need that trust in Hashem, but there's another that trust can give us one more ingredient, which also can make things much easier. There's a Gemara in Maseches Smochos. The Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva lost a son, Rabbi Shimon, and he was in Tveria, and he was maspid his son. And it says, I think it says 10,000 people came to the Levaya and heard his. He gets up and he says, "You're coming here to this Levaya has caused me nechama," he says. "And had I even buried 7 sons, it also would have been a nechama. And don't think it's easy to get nechama. But your coming here has either indicated or has caused that my son is a ben olam haba. That to me is the greatest nechama." So it's a very strange hesped that he's making. He says, even had I buried 7 sons, and don't think it's easy to get nechama. What's he saying? So I think he's saying Porsche. He's saying, the truth is that to get nechama in certain situations seems to be impossible. How could he lost a son? I lost 7 sons. How could how, where? Unfortunately, we've heard stories not too long ago about people losing, you know, families and tragedies and fires and things like this. And how can you find nechama? And if you say that you find nechama, you better apologize and not say to these people that it was easy for you. Because if you see someone who finds nechama, you'll say, oh, he didn't care. He didn't love his children. It didn't really mean anything. Or what they say about other people, he lost his mind. You know, he went off the office. Because how could you find nechama? It's impossible. So he says, don't think it's easy to find the chumah. In other words, I don't think I'm faking. It's real. It's very difficult. It should be impossible, but I am. Why? Because I know my son is a ben olam haba. And I think what that means is as follows. If the temporal existence of this world, the temporary existence of this world, is all that it's about, we should give up on the chama. We should give up, but it's very difficult. How can you find the chama? Yeah, there's certain things you find the chama. Okay, so I lost some money. Okay, so I made it back. All right, so that's to be the chama. You want to say, okay, so then I'll even retroactively remove it and say it was as if it was a short period of suffering. Fine, but there are certain things that you find the chama. How do you find the chama for certain things? And the only way is this realization that this world is just a stepping stone. It's like a continuum. It starts here and it goes on eternally. And it's all part of that. So if something here is missing or something here got lost or this, so okay, but Maisa, there's an eternity. You know, I often tell people, I've said it, I'm sure I've said it here too, that the only lasting eternal relationship is the relationship between my neshama and my creator. Because every other relationship has its limitation. It ends at some point. This is the only one that goes on. But if there's nitzchias, if there's eternity, it's a whole different world. And when a neshama leaves this world, that neshama still is connected, still goes to Hashem. It has it. In fact, the truth of the matter is, people that know when there's a tragic loss, they say, listen, the ones that the tragedy is for us, which is true, the one that left, they got it made, they got it fine. You know, we don't know, we don't see, we were never there, we're worried for them, we're worried for us. But if there's that realization that there's a continuum, that life continues, my son is a ben olam haba. And the schus of you people coming either caused it, or the fact that you came is either a sign, that's not clear. But now I know my son is a ben olam haba. Because it's almost as if, Chassidus Yid in Los Angeles once told me, he was there for the early days right after the war, and he sent his kids away to yeshivas to learn. There was very little doing in Los Angeles. So he used to cry, and he sometimes he almost didn't want to send them. Like, he knew he had to, but he couldn't. So he said, told me, his wife told him like this. He says, would you rather cry now or cry later? In other words, you're crying now, but you're doing it because there's a broader good, there's an eventual good, there's a lasting good, which is going to happen. And with that, we can find a little bit. But that too requires a tremendous level of emunah and a tremendous level of trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's going to make it happen. There is an eternity there, and this is part of it. This is part of a plan. And maybe we can begin to feel a little bit more of a sense of that. Almost like people send the kid away to yeshiva. Okay, so out of town. Sometimes those days, someone told me, I still remember his name, Baruch Siegel. That's Rabbi Dovid Harris's grandfather, told me once that he grew up in Tzfat, way back in those days, and he, after his bar mitzvah, he traveled on a donkey to Yerushalayim to learn yeshiva, never saw his parents again. They didn't even come to his wedding. That was the matzah in those days. That's it. But the parents, I sent my son away. They say that Rabbi Levine had a few children that he lost. And one son was unbelievable, 18 months old, he passed away. And they say he used to make a brocha when he was nursing on his mother. I mean, different world. Anyway, so some women came in to be Menachem Mogel and they saw her davening. And they were talking in a different language. They were speaking Russian. They didn't know she knew Russian. And they said that something's wrong with her. She's davening as if nothing happened. And so she overheard them. And when she finished davening, she said, there's nothing wrong with me. She says, I had a child, and I sent him to learn Torah with his creator. Because Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu learns with the little children that leave this world. And with that concept, it's a whole different story. Yes, it's painful, and parents are not painful when kids go away, go to college or go to yeshiva, whatever it is, they don't come back for a long time. You know, in those days, especially today, everybody's running home every day of the week. This yontif, this occasion, this simcha, this long weekend break, everyone's traveling all over. But I'm not going to see you for a year. Mothers would cry. I'm not going to see you for 2 years. Who knows, you know, like... And that was, those days, there was no telephone, there was no, you know.
Like, I speak to you 4 times a day.
That's right. No cell phones, you know. And if you did speak, I remember yet from Israel the first time, having to go to the post office to make an international call. I hear such a thing. I had to go to the post office on Rehov Yafo, I'm talking years ago, but to make an international call. You wanted a call. This is,
kids come home between...
Between the two halves.
Yeah. It's like nothing. They come, they're just around the corner. So, but imagine you're not going to see a kid for a long time. It's a very pain. But I know. This. I sent him. I want it. And I think there's one more point which I think we should just make all of this in context.
So she's a shmuz by Nakeda.
About?
Avraham Avinu cried. He quoted the Chazal and said that he had control of all senses. So why did he cry? Just control. Because the way is to be normal is to have the emotions. But I'm not asking, I'm doing it anyway because it's the right thing. I'm saying so, pain, meaning it's not a stereo, meaning it's painful.
Yeah.
And you should, and the right thing is to, you know, act on your emotion, but you're doing it. That's the right thing to do.
But yet he did it with belief sholim too.
But with the crying, even though he cried, he could have theoretically controlled the crying, but that's not what you're supposed to.
Rabbi Yisrael Salanta says a little differently. He says that the crying comes from a universal midah, and that you can't change. He says you can change an inherited midah, you could change a learned midah, can even be miskaber on a developed love, but on a universal trait that everybody has, the love of a parent to a child, says that you can't be miskaver. It's a little bit different from that.
Maybe anyway, I'm missing up the shmuz, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe I'm misquoting.
Whatever. No, I don't know. But anyway, that's... So anyway, because just one more thing I think is very good to keep in mind. many Mefarshim say that when we say Lishuoscho Kivisi Hashem or Kilishuoscho Kivino Kol Hayoyim, what are we talking about? Lishuoscho, the your Yeshua that you're going to give to us, or are we asking of your Yeshua for yourself from your own sorrow? Now that seems to be a very high level, but the reality is that if we have a relationship with Hashem, and if there's love in that relationship, so what's the pshat love? Ani lo doydi v'doydi li, doydi li v'anehi loves me and I love him. So I love him. What do you mean? I love him. Well, I love him. I want to do what he wants from me. I want to give him a nachas ruach. I want to come close to him and all of that. All of those things are somewhat, or some of those things could be somewhat selfish. But if I include in that love, I feel your pain. Lishuoscho kivisi. Lishuoscho kivisi Hashem. Why? Because I want you to have a Yeshua too. And I know that your pain is not only as great as mine, but it's far greater than mine. So when a person adds that into the formula of human suffering, he comes out with this idea that Hashem is suffering too. So he's the perpetrator. He's making it happen. He's suffering more than I am. Why is he doing it? There's very good reason. So I still may not know the reason, and that doesn't satisfy my intellectual curiosity and maybe some emotional needs as well. But it can give me that sense of, look, if he's doing it with such massive pain, then I know that what he's doing is good. He's not going to inflict pain on himself. That's, and then when I say the words, Lishuoscho kivino kol hayoyim, Lishuoscho kivisi kol hayoyim, I have a different dimension. I say, a little bit, yeah, I feel for my own pain. I also feel for your pain. And if we can feel for his pain, it can mitigate the pain that we have. Because if he's having more pain than we're having, then we can realize that, hey, something's going on over here. And he's doing it for our benefit. And we have to find the strength to be able to cope, and to be able to grow from it, to be able to maybe figure out what the lesson is that we're supposed to learn. But it can have a different effect on us. And then when we keep in mind that eventually, no matter what we go through, that it's in retrospect, we're going to see that Rachmi Dishmaya. We believe in that Rachmi Dishmaya. We still have Bitochen in that Rachmi Dishmaya. Imagine 2,000 years, 1950 years, and we're still saying, Ki Mechakim Anachnu Lochmim Koyim Chomalkenu Sofia, Ki Mechakim, and we're still waiting. We're still waiting. If we're still waiting, that's the greatest sense of, hey, you know, we're still trusting you, we're still relying on you, we're still connected to you, and we have that sense of trust in you, and that can give us strength. And I want to just conclude with one point. We've mentioned numerous times around this table that the seeing examples of a giant in a certain midah enhances our capacity to be able to achieve that midah. That's the hill of Machayev Aniyim, that idea. So imagine that. Think about it. We say Shabbos morning, Koyim Chom Al Kedol Sofia, Ki Machakim Anachloch. Well, we said it in this shul, we said it in that shul, we say it in that shul, we say it over here, we say it over there, we say it every place that Jewish people are getting together to daven. And they've been saying it for close to 2,000 years, Ki Machakim Anachloch. If the Jewish people can continue to say they're waiting for Mashiach, they're waiting for that Gilui Shechina, after so long and we're still waiting, that gives us the capacity also to keep on waiting, to keep on trusting, to keep on hoping, to keep on relying. And if we have that, reliance itself is the greatest nechama, because I know it's coming. I know it's coming. I know when it comes, it will retroactively erase all of the suffering. It's a great source of strength. And seeing it in action for so long can enhance our capacity to feel it. And the more we feel it, the more we feel comfort. If I know for sure that it's going to end. The biggest problem, the biggest overwhelming thing with the Golos is that after so many years, it seems like it's never going to end. It's never ending. Another year, another Tisha B'Av, and another Tisha B'Av, and another Tisha B'Av, and another Pesach with Anisin Asin Ligoyel, and another Pesach, and Yeshayim Rebbe Tishrei, and another Tishrei, and another this, and another. But you know something? That has to give us the strength when we see we're still waiting. That gives us the strength to wait in everything else in life. And connect the connection to Hashem and the ability to wait for Him to help and not to lose hope and to be able to trust Him can be the greatest source of the Chokmah.